Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Check this out. Give me a minute. I got to run this thing down. The LA Clippers made the deal, not the Lakers. Although the Lakers made a deal, but not that deal. The Clippers made a deal. They send Tobias Harris and Mike Scott to Philadelphia in exchange for Wilson Chandler, Landry Shamet, Mike Muscala, Philadelphia's 2020 protected first-round pick, Miami's unprotected 2021 first-rounder, and second-round picks in 2021 and 2023. Now, I know what your first reaction is. I had the same reaction. They busted up Bobby and Toby. Best part of that deal. Bobin is going to Philadelphia as well. Bobby and Toby is going east. More on that in a moment. Let me tell you something. That is such a big swing. That is a monster swing by Philly. If you thought trading for Jimmy Butler earlier this year was a big move, they just chased it with another. They looked around the east. They realized it was right there for the taking, and they just went all in. I love it. I love this move for Philly. Now, I can't guarantee it's going to work. I don't know if all these guys can get on the same page quickly, but if there's anybody who can make that happen, it's Brett Brown. Brett Brown's the perfect guy to try to bring this thing together. And if he can, look the hell out. Check out that starting lineup. Ben Simmons, J.J. Redick, Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid. I mean, is that any good? Four all-star talents and one of the best three-point shooters in the game. Get out of here with that. And Mike Scott, giving you a four off the bench who can shoot. Bobin, who can give you 10 minutes of unstoppable offense a night and a hell of a lot of fun on a go-kart. It's going to get nice. The only thing better than Bobby and Toby is Bobby and Toby and Joel. So now you've united the greatest comedy duo in the West with the greatest person on the internet in the world. It's the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper. And if Philadelphia really wants to keep moving, they've got Markelle Fultz, who they can deal for some of the depth that they just lost. I'm telling you, man, that is such a big swing. I love it. There are so many teams in so many sports that are just happy being bad or being satisfied, just being mediocre. So few teams willing to put themselves out there. So few teams willing to take that big swing. So few teams willing to go all in who want to win. Philadelphia is one of those few teams. First-year GM, Elton Brand, doing work. First Jimmy Butler, and now Tobias Harris. Man, that is brass as hell. That's why they brought Elton Brand in. So, yeah, you're going to have some cap issues eventually. But do you think the fans show up at games to root for salary cap space? Hell no. The fans want wins. The players want to win. They're rooting for teams, not Excel spreadsheets. Philly is saying, you rode with us when we sucked. Now let's give you something back. Let's go get the East. Let's go win the East. Now, I don't want to get ahead of myself. I don't want to get it twisted. As good as that lineup is, even if they're all able to get on the same page, and that's not a lock, but even if they are, they're not going to be favored to beat Golden State in the finals, which is why I like the attitude even more. I like that deal even more because of that, because you've got so many teams that are looking at Golden State and giving themselves a pass on actually being good. Like so many teams that are saying, well, we can't compete with Golden State, so let's not try. We can wait for them to age out. We can wait for them to be broken up. But we can't beat them, so let's just lay out and wait until their run's done. But you've got a few teams saying, man, hell with that. Screw it. Let's give it a shot. And then you've got the Clippers. All right, let's talk about the Clippers. Pretty easy for people to come in and say they just got worked, that they just gave up Tobias Harris, who should have been an all-star, for a number of pieces and picks. And if that's your take, I got to say, man, you got this all wrong too. You got to sit down. I've got some things to tell you. Because as much as Elton Brand is doing work for this season, the Clippers front office is doing work for this summer. All right, take a look at this now. The Clippers have made no secret of the fact that they are swinging for the fences in the summer. They're going after the big fish. In fact, they're going after whales. Kawhi, KD, maybe Kyrie or Butler. They probably were not going to keep Tobias Harris and sign him to the deal that he deserved, so they moved him and they got a lot back. Now, with respect, that a lot back is really not about Chandler or Muscala. It's not even about Shamet, although he can play. It's about Philadelphia's 2020 protected first round pick, Miami's unprotected 2021 first rounder, and second rounders in 2021 and 2023, which are both from Detroit and probably are going to be high second round picks. Yeah, great, Rome. They've got draft picks for the future. Right. Draft picks for the future, which they can trade this summer if they need to. And while nobody is coming to Staples and chanting, salary cap, salary cap, they've got a huge chunk right now, and they could have a ton with one more trade. Make one more deal, and they can sign two big free agents. Stay pat, and they can sign one and trade for one. Or sign one now and have flexibility for a future summer. What I'm saying is, I guarantee the Lakers are looking over at this, and all of a sudden they're concerned. Hell, remember the other day when Anthony Davis released his list of teams that he re-signed with and the Clippers were on that list, but they didn't have enough to trade for at that time? They do now. They do now. And wait, it gets even better. That move with Philly does not just give LA ammo for future deals, it also makes Philadelphia better. That shows LA got worked, right? Wrong, because making Philly better makes it tougher for Toronto to reach the finals, which makes it tougher for Toronto to keep Kawhi, which might drive Kawhi to the Clippers. Here's another thing. If the Clippers miss the playoffs this year, they get to keep their own first-round pick instead of sending it to Boston. And this deal pretty much assures that they will miss the playoffs. And if they keep that pick, it hurts Boston's ability to trade for Davis or someone else. Clippers are looking freaking brilliant. I mean, there's next level, and then there's whatever hell level the Clippers front office is on right now. The Clippers are full-on galaxy brain at this point. I mean, I don't know exactly who is behind this, but I think it's got to be Lee Jenkins. Who else? It's a rare deal now, a rare deal where both teams got over. You've got two different sets of priorities, and they both got over. Nothing but respect for Elton Brand and the Clippers front office. I love that deal for everybody. It's an amazing deal for both sides. Or, in the words of those famous Clippers bros, turn up, love you guys, awesome.
Turn up, love you guys, awesome.
That is an amazing deal. And the Lakers have to be looking at that like, damn. What the hell just happened across the street? 1-800-636-8686. Seriously, turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
I can't remember the last time I was so hyped about the Clippers. Well, other than when they hired Lee Jenkins. Lee, I miss you, man. What's up?
For right now, I'll definitely miss it. I'll miss being on the show with you, too.
Whoa. You're not doing that anymore.
I know. I'll break that into the contract. Jim Rome appearances are permitted. Thanks, Romy. Appreciate it. We got to get Mark next.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Romy. I can't come on the program anymore. I'm too busy doing the Tobias Harris deal that's setting us up for the big summer. All right, and then a ton to get to regarding the LA Lakers. What a night they had. So first of all, they pulled out of the negotiation for Anthony Davis. That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, we're not negotiating anymore. Sure you're not. That's pretty funny. Blazers head coach Terry Stotts joins us once again. Terry, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How have you been?
Good, good. Terry, nice to visit. I know you're coming off a tough loss to Miami last night. And afterwards, you felt like the team didn't have a lot of pop for most of the game. As you watch that game play out, Terry, let me start right there. What do you think that was? Was it just a matter of having the time off?
You know, I think that's easy to point to, and I think it probably was a factor. We had canceled shoot-around in the morning. I'm a big believer in routine, and we canceled shoot-around because we had some snow and icy roads. So I don't know if there was just kind of a funk in the first half, but it took us a while to get going. If you watch the game, the third quarter, we kind of made a nice run and had some energy, but it was it was just a game where if you're playing against a team like Miami that plays with a lot of energy and grit, you have to match that, and we didn't do that last night.
Wednesday's Daily Jungle is brought to you by TurboTax. TurboTax Live is a new way to do taxes. It combines tech with on-demand tax pros who can answer your questions and offer personalized advice. Real CPAs and EAs can help you with your return and find all the deductions that apply to you. Their tax experts are there when you need them so you can file with complete peace of mind. TurboTax Live's on-demand CPAs and EAs can not only answer your questions and offer advice, they can even review your return with you, going over it line by line, so you can feel confident that you're getting the maximum refund. You've got real tax questions, so TurboTax Live has real tax professionals who can answer them for you. They have CPAs and EAs who are on demand, ready to give you advice and answer questions as you go. Their tax pros get to know you so they can offer personalized suggestions and find all the deductions that you deserve. Whether you're stuck on a specific question or need guidance working through your return, their tax experts can give you the confidence to ensure your return is done correctly. TurboTax Live with CPAs and EAs on demand. See details at TurboTax.com. Terry Stotts joining us. All right, so where are you at? 53 games in, you're on pace for 50 wins. You're right in the middle of everything in the West. How do you like where your team is right now, both from a playing standpoint and an identity standpoint?
You know, if you had asked me this last Thursday after we had a really good home win against Utah, I would have said, you know, we're in a good spot. We're playing really good basketball. Standings-wise, you know, we're happy with where we are, and we just got to keep it going. Now, after last night, it was a setback. And, you know, it's in this league, things can turn on a dime. So as a coach, you're concerned about how we played last night, and we got a tough game, as you mentioned, against San Antonio. And in the West, you can't catch your breath. I mean, you gotta keep going forward. And we've got a tough schedule this week before the All-Star break. And this week we'll kind of dictate the rest of the season for us, I believe.
We're talking to Terry Stotts. In the meantime, the team acquired Rodney Hood from Cleveland in a trade. I know that he's excited about the opportunity. What do you like about his game and what he brings to your group?
Well, I like his versatility. I think from an offensive standpoint, he can score in different ways. He's good coming off screens. He can handle a little bit. He can post a mismatch. He's a good three-point shooter. And I think he kind of fits in with our other wing players as far as what he can bring us at the offensive end. Defensively, I think he can guard multiple positions. Again, he has good length. I think he has a very good fundamental background with his college and playing at Utah for a while and being in the NBA Finals. So I like his experience. And the other thing is, you know, Mo Harkless has been banged up this year for most of the year, and really gives us, if something does happen with Mo or if he has a setback, it gives us insurance there.
You know, it gives you insurance, but it seems like also it gives you a lot of options, including Jake Lehman, who had a career-high 25 last night, and he's been averaging better than 14 points per game over the last 10. It's a good problem to have, but how do you go about balancing those minutes for everybody?
You know, I'm that expression is a good problem to have. Everybody says that except the head coach.
Right.
I'm a big believer in chemistry and building a team and have everybody understanding their roles and how things fit. And there's going to be an adjustment period. Jake Lehman's playing great basketball. I think everybody saw that last night. You know, he's making it hard to keep him off the floor. We're having other guys that are playing well, and there's gonna be an adjustment period for a lot of people. One night it'll be one player, one night it'll be the next. But that's part of being a good team is figuring things out and people accepting roles. And when it's your opportunity, just like Jake Lehman, who's been in and out of the lineup, when your opportunity comes, be ready for it and make the most of it.
We're talking to Terry Stotts, the head coach of the Trailblazers. Trade deadline, of course, is tomorrow, and there's been a lot of movement already, especially in the West. Terry, how much attention are you paying to what other teams are doing and what moves they might make? Is it something that you monitor, or do you just stay focused on what's in front of you in your own work?
Oh, I keep abreast of what's going on in the league, and I think it's, you know, with all the rumors out there and the deals that have already been done, teams, you know, kind of positioning themselves one way or the other. I think it's interesting. I think it's a great time of year, especially if you're a fan of the NBA, because there's a lot to talk about. But for me personally, I keep abreast. But for us, as the coach, my focus is on our team and what we have to do. And if we make a deal like we did with Rodney, how does that impact our team and how can we be better because of it? But You know, obviously if we had played a team that just made a deal, that changes the preparation a little bit. But, you know, 24 hours from now, it'll all be over.
In the meantime, you got 24 more hours. So how do you approach that, Terry? For instance, some of the Laker young players were saying, look, we'd be lying if we said it didn't affect us. If you've got guys whose names come up on your roster, how do you approach that? I mean, do you talk to your guys, or do you just kind of leave it alone?
I personally leave it alone because there's nothing I can do about it. They have to, you know, any issues they're having with it, they have to resolve within. I can't necessarily guide them one way or the other. I've had players here who every year thought they were going to be traded and they didn't get traded. You know, I've been around it long enough that sometimes deals do happen, sometimes they don't. With social media now, players hear everything, their agents hear everything, their family hears everything. So it's just a period of time where the player has to do whatever he has to do to get through it. And some guys are oblivious to it, and some guys it affects them. And it's I don't know if there's any words that I could give them that would take away any of that.
I appreciate that answer. Terry Stotts joining us. You recently called for a blackout day where coaches and players are supposed to stay away from the practice facility and not think about basketball for a bit. You've been known to do that throughout the season. What's the thinking behind that?
Well, just to get players off, and you know, we have optional days where the coaches come in, and if guys do want to come in, it's an off day, but if they want to come in, they know that the coaches and the training staff and the strength and conditioning people will all be there if they want to get something. You know, we had a fluky schedule having 5 days off, but the blackout is as much for the coaches as it is for the players. You know, coaches need a break. They need time with their family. And I think it's good. There are a lot of players that if you don't make a blackout, they'd still come in. I think it's sometimes just important to say, you know, you need to stay away a little bit. And if they come in, they come in. But to let them know, especially the young guys, let them know, hey, it's okay to have a day off and have a life.
At the same time, what about the vets? I mean, you've got a team full of guys who you know are going to work out, and they're going to work on their game all the time. As an example, how hard is it to keep guys like Dame and CJ from working out on blackout days?
Oh, we'll have, I would say a lot of blackout days. We'll have 3 to 5 guys come in. You know, this last one, you probably read the article where Jake came in and CJ came in and Nurk came in. I mean, we had different guys come in. So we had probably about 5, 6 guys come in on that Saturday. It was the third blackout day in a row because of our schedule. But, you know, I'm fortunate to have a roster that guys like being in the gym. They like working out. I have a great staff who like spending time with the players. So worrying about guys getting work, getting their shots up, staying in condition, staying in the weight room when they need to, really hasn't been an issue that I had to mandate a lot.
And Terry, I'm sure you're not focused on this type of thing, but back in December, you passed Rick Adelman for second on the team's all-time win list, and now you're between Adelman and Jack Ramsey. As a student of the game, I mean, what's it mean to hear your name mentioned with theirs?
You know, it's really special for me. Two of the guys that – there are two coaches that I've admired throughout my career. I've made no bones of the fact that I've taken a lot of stuff from Rick Adelman, what he did in Sacramento from an offensive standpoint, and I've been a huge admirer, as is anybody in the NBA, of Coach Ramsey and what he meant to the game of basketball. So to be in between those two guys in Portland is really special to me because, like I said, they're in the top 10. I think Rick should be in the Hall of Fame. To be pigeoned between two Hall of Fame coaches is really special. I certainly didn't see that coming 7 years ago when I got here.
I think that's amazing from your standpoint. Rick Adelman to me was a hell of a coach. I loved him. I loved talking to him. I loved watching him work in Sacramento. He was always great to have on the show. Let me finally say this. You don't reach more than 300 wins with the Blazers and more than 400 overall without being able to adapt. And this year you've been using an iPad on the sideline more than a whiteboard. Initially, what was that transition like and how do you like it now?
Well, I love it, and you know, I lost the screen a couple times, and you know, it just took a few times to get used to it during a game when you really have to, you know, do things quickly. But I love it because I can clear the board right away. I can use different colors. I can save the plays if I want. It's really been. I wouldn't go back to the whiteboard. I don't have dry erase on my fingers anymore. You know, it's just it's been very convenient, and I think the players really like it too. It's very easy to read, and it's been a good transition.
It's progress. He is 7 years in. Portland is the number four seed right now, and they've got another big one coming up tomorrow night. They're hosting San Antonio. Terry Stotts, good friend of the program, and always nice to have you on, Terry. Thank you very much. Great to have you back.
All right, thanks, Jim. The best to you.
There is nothing more annoying than old software on your work computer. Capterra can change that for you instantly. Remember 1989, the year the World Wide Web was invented? Yeah, we've come a long way in 30 years. So why does it feel like the software that you use every single day at work is stuck in the past? Take a leap into the future by finding the right software for your business on Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 700,000 reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software. Fact is, I would be absolutely lost without Capterra. I have to maintain relationships and stay in contact with several hundred radio stations. Capterra helps me do that, and they can help you with your business too. Visit capterra.com/Rome for free today and find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/Rome. Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/Rome. Capterra.com/Rome. Los Angeles, 94. A 42-point loss to an Oladipo-less Pacers team. That was the worst loss of LeBron's career in a game that he played in. And it wasn't just that they were blown out. It was the optics and the audio. There was the optic of LeBron with three empty seats on the bench between him and the nearest Laker, Brandon Ingram. Now, you can read into that all you want, and there's a lot to be read into. Maybe all of it's true. Or maybe it's just how it played out when the guys got off the bench. Or maybe it's a reaction to LeBron effectively putting the entire locker room on the trade block. So read into that the way you want. But you don't have to work too hard to read anything into this from Pacer fans when Ingram stepped to the foul line in the first quarter.
I really do. I think one of the things you can do against the Lakers is you can offensive rebound them. But most importantly, you have to transition back for defensive purposes to force them to play through your defense.
Brandon Ingram in his third year out of Duke. He averaged 16 points last year in year two. He's at 17.2. And his last five, he's averaging 23 points per game. With all of the rumors and the speculation.
Braun's going to trade you. Braun's going to trade you. That is so cold. That is so funny. That is so savage. Man, that's got to hurt, too. That's got to hurt. Braun's going to trade you. It's got to hurt because you know there's some truth to it. That was savage. That was cold. But that wasn't nearly as cold. Not nearly as cold as when JaVale McGee stepped to the line later in the game. Roll that.
McGee averaging 11 points, 7 rebounds, played in Golden State last year and won a ring.
They just presented it to him at the game LeBron James didn't play because McGee didn't play in the first one when they played in Golden State.
You know what's worse? You know what's worse than Braun's going to trade you? Not worth trading. Not worth trading. Not worth trading. Man, that's cold-blooded, Pacer fans. Man, don't do them like that, Pacer fans. Hey, don't get it twisted. Losing by 40-plus last night, this is really important. Losing by 40-plus last night does not make the Lakers any more desperate for Davis than they already were. Because they can't get any more desperate for Davis than they already are. They know it. Everybody knows it. That blowout loss, humiliating as it is, does not impact their need for Davis. It's not like they would have needed Davis less if they lost by 4 or 2 or 1 instead of 42. What that loss does show is that the trade rumors are getting to the players, especially the young players. Just ask Lance Stephenson.
You know, it's tough, especially when you hear your name in the trade rumors. But hey, it's a business. We got to come out and perform no matter what. Bring your best. Can't let that get to you. You just got to play, man. I know it's tough, but you just got to play. Gotta be a pro.
You think that's bothering some guys right now?
Oh, definitely. You know, a lot of guys, they want to be, whoever in the trade talks, want to be on the team that they on. And they feel like when you're in the trade talks, you feel like you're not doing what you're supposed to do. So, I mean, it's definitely hard on you. But like I said, it's a business. You got to be a pro and you got to bring it every night.
Lance Stephenson, the voice of reason in that locker room. I mean, you got to admit, some of those young guys, they're kind of young and they're kind of out there, honestly. He is the voice of reason. Of course, he's been through it before. But guys like Stephenson, Rondo, they know. He knows. Born Ready is the voice of reason and spitting straight truth. But the fact is, it is hard on guys. When your name is coming up in trade talks, you know on some level, you know the team doesn't want you. Doesn't want you. Or at the very least, does not want you as much as it wants somebody else. So how's that not going to impact your head and your game, especially if you're a young player? LeBron knows. LeBron knows. Not from experience, but he's seen it before because he's traded other guys before. He's seen teammates get dealt before.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, we have a lot of guys that's been in trade talks the last couple of weeks that's never been in that position before. So you have to ask those guys and you know, how they're dealing with it. You can't really ask me. I've never, you know, been a part of that, but I've been a part of teammates.
Yeah, LeBron's never had to sweat the trade deadline before. Damn, man, am I coming or am I going? Are they going to move me? No, but LeBron has dangled and traded other players before. He's seen other teammates get moved before. So you got guys on the trade block. You know, how's that going? Hey, don't bother. Let me answer that for you. Not good. Not good at all. Even if LeBron himself has not been on the block, he has an idea of what it must be like to be on the trade block.
I know it has to be tough on a lot of our guys, especially our young guys. Right now they've just never been a part of it, and they're hearing it every single day. And I know that the worst thing that you can do right now is be on social media. And I know all young guys love social media. So, that definitely can't help.
He's so right. And that's how you end up going out in a game where literally before the game for a moment, you were favored. You were favored. And you go up against an Indiana Pacers team with nothing to play for, without Vic Oladipo, and you lose by 42. How does that happen? When the entire team's on the trade block. Which is why you have Kyle Kuzma joking about going bird box the rest of the week. But again, that's the thing. Here's the thing to me. It's not even like it's all going to be fine when the deadline passes. It's not like Thursday at 3 p.m., the deadline rolls around and everything's back to normal. It probably won't be. You don't just forget that the team tried to trade you, that the team thought it was better off without you. You don't forget that LeBron doesn't want to run with you, that he and they may actually be pissed that they don't move you and that you're still there. How is that not rattling around your head? Just because the trade deadline comes to pass doesn't mean that that's not still in your head, especially if you're a young player and you're on social media and you've not been through this before. In other words, it's infected their domes. It's affecting them on the floor. They're freaking out on and off the floor. So if you don't get a deal done for Davis, you're going to have a team full of guys who are probably butthurt and wounded, who feel like they're not wanted, and Bron and Luke and Irv are going to need all these same players who are all jacked up now mentally to come together down the stretch. Good luck with that, everybody. Luke Walton already had a tough enough job as it was, and now he's got a nearly impossible job to keep this group together. And worst of all, they're about to go to Boston tomorrow night, and then they get to see the Big Four in Philadelphia on Sunday. This could get really ugly, and much worse before it gets any better, if it gets any better at all. That was a catastrophe, and the Pacer fans could not be any more savage than they were. It's a big night for them. They had nothing to play for, nothing to see. Until the Lakers show up. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but I agree with Lance Stephenson. You got to pro up. Man, pro up, man up. Be pros about this. Yeah, it's no fun. Nobody wants to see their name bandied about as trade fodder. But you can't go out there and lose by 40. We are joined by Chris Mannix. Chris, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Nice to have you back. Let me get right at it, Chris, because there is so much to cover, and I know you're busy. It's been a lot of talk and focus on the Lakers and the Pelicans, and then the Clippers and the Sixers go out, and they make that monster deal, Chris, involving Tobias Harris. I want to get into the on-court details in a second, but purely from an ambition standpoint, what does that move say about Philadelphia and their plans? How big of a swing was that?
Well, it's a pretty big swing because you know, they can now boast one of the most talented starting lineups in the Eastern Conference. Now, I'm withholding judgment on how good they can be because I still want to see how all these pieces fit together. I think they still have some defensive deficiencies in that backcourt. And we all know that, you know, to win in the Eastern Conference, you're probably going to have to compete with Kyrie Irving and Eric Bledsoe and Kyle Lowry. How do they defend those guys? Tobias Harris going from, you know, a 20-point, 16-shot-per-game guy in L.A. is someone that's going to be in a far more reduced role in Philadelphia. How do they all mix together? But, look, it's a bold move by Elton Brand and that Sixer front office to really go for it this season, really over the next couple seasons with Tobias Harris.
I absolutely love it. I think you're right, though. We have to wait and see how the pieces fit because you're adding a huge piece in season in Jimmy Butler. And now Harris seems to me, Chris, if anybody can make this thing work, it would be Brett Brown, but we have to see how it plays out. Now, they do give up some depth to get Harris. So what's that mean with Markelle Fultz? As an example, might they use the buyout market with him to add to or to deal with the depth and deficiencies there?
Well, they're definitely going to be active in the buyout market, hoping that, you know, wing players, versatile, multi-position guys will become available. Now, those guys are few and far between anyway, and there's going to be heavy competition amongst the top teams for top-tier buyout guys like Wesley Matthews, if he wriggles free in New York, or even DeAndre Jordan, if the Knicks decide to cut him loose. But the Sixers will be players. A question, and we think we kind of know the answer to this question, but a question that's come up in the last, you know, 24 hours or 12 hours, really, are the Sixers ready to cut ties with Markelle Fultz? Fultz, you can't expect anything from him this year. He's been out too long, and even when he was playing, he wasn't right. You can't plug him in the final 20 games of the season and expect him to be a contributor in the playoffs. The question you have with the Sixers, who have been, in a lot of ways, passengers on this Markelle Fultz ride over the last year, are they ready to move on from him? And if they are, the market is still reasonably robust for Markelle Fultz. There are teams out there, point guard starved teams, that'll send you a decent role player, you know, whether it's Orlando with Terrence Ross or Washington with Trevor Ariza. There are teams that'll probably send you a decent role player in exchange for Markelle Fultz. Now, that'd be selling low for the Sixers because Markelle was the number one pick just a couple of years ago. But at this point, it's becoming more and more difficult to see how Markelle Fultz, if he can rediscover his former self, how he does it in Philadelphia.
The NBA trade deadline's tomorrow. Chris Mannix joining us to break it down. Chris, what about Kyrie Irving? Now, he said back in October that he would re-sign with the Celtics, and then last week he appeared to back off that. What do you make of his latest comments?
It was interesting. And it certainly surprised people within the Celtic organization. I had one of Kyrie's ex-teammates talk to me right after that, and he said that the Kyrie blow-up there, he felt it had little to do or less to do with dissatisfaction with Boston, even though the Boston season's been uneven and certainly not what he expected it to be back in October. But one thing this teammate told me that Kyrie hates is having his future attach the future of somebody else's. This is, after all, the player who forced his way out of Cleveland because he didn't want to play in LeBron's shadow anymore. The idea that Kevin Durant could somehow influence Kyrie Irving to go to New York, or Anthony Davis could convince Kyrie Irving to go to L.A. or stay in Boston, that's the kind of thing that Kyrie deems disrespectful. That was the opinion of this former teammate. So I guess it's just how you kind of interpret it. Now, some people can say he's down on Boston. Boston would respond, and has responded to me anyway, by, you know, insisting that they are on the same page with Kyrie Irving. They have been very transparent, very communicative with him. They have viewed the relationship with him as more of a partnership than kind of a team-player dynamic. They've done everything possible, and they've been getting nothing but positive feedback from Kyrie Irving about his future there. So It would have behooved Boston if they had just said, yeah, I said what I said back in October, refer to that. But I still believe they're confident that Kyrie Irving wants to be there.
We're talking to Chris Mannix. One more thought about that. So what do you think Danny Ainge has made of how the season has played out overall with the return of Kyrie and Gordon Hayward?
It's been disappointing for everybody. And, you know, look, they expected some bumps along the way. They didn't expect this. And maybe they should have. I mean, those young players, everybody talked about sacrifice in the preseason. But it's not easy to go from being a 35-minute-per-game player who was one game away, you know, a quarter away from going to the NBA Finals with a 3-2 lead on the Cavaliers in the NBA Conference Finals, to go from that type of role to a lesser one, that's been a lot tougher to adjust to than anybody within the Celtics thought. Couple that with the fact that Gordon Hayward is still a fraction of his former self. He had some good games, like he had last night against Cleveland. He had a 35-point game in January, triple-double in January, but it's just a roller coaster ride with him. So they've been frustrated, but they have noted, Jim, and if you look at the way they've played, the month of January was a great month for Boston. They're only three games back of the number two seed in the Eastern Conference with plenty of time to make up that gap. So it's been frustrating for that front office and the coaching staff, but there's a lot of time left for them to change things up.
Chris Mannix joining us for a few more moments. And then, of course, Chris, you've got Anthony Davis, who is the biggest piece in all the trade talk. AD's made it pretty clear he does not want to go to Boston. What do you think that Ainge makes of that? Would that dissuade him from trying to make a move for Davis this summer?
Here's the thing, Jim. The Celtics would disagree with the premise of your question. Like what they would say is that Anthony Davis himself has never told them he doesn't want to go to Boston. He has submitted lists of teams that he would go to and sign extensions with, and there is no question that opening up this whole process 2 weeks before the trade deadline was designed to get him to the Lakers. But there's a difference between having a preferred team and a team you would sign with. And from the statement that Rich Paul, his agent, made at the beginning, saying Anthony Davis wants to win championships, to the statements that Davis made in his first post-trade request press gaggle a couple of days later, he consistently says, it's my time, I want to find ways to win. And the Celtics believe that they offered the best chance for Anthony Davis to win. Moreover, they know he has a strong relationship with Kyrie Irving, and they believe that if they can acquire Anthony Davis, Kyrie will stay, and that will convince Anthony Davis to ultimately stay. And as you've noticed, Jim, like initially it was Anthony Davis wants to go to the Lakers, and all of a sudden the Knicks are involved. Now it's the Clippers and Bucks that are thrown into that mix. How long past the deadline before Anthony Davis, you know, decides it's okay if he goes to Boston? I think the Celtics, the bottom line with all this, the Celtics believe that Anthony Davis is not opposed to going there. He may not have fully embraced it at this point, but they believe he's not opposed to it.
Well, all the more reason, Chris, that the Lakers need to get this done if they possibly can. So what do you make of the package that they reportedly have been offering the Pelicans for Anthony Davis? And if you were Dell Demps, would you give it serious consideration or no?
I think the question Dell Demps has to answer is, will Jason Tatum be in a package from the Celtics? Now, I reported yesterday that the Celtics have not directly dangled Jason Tatum. They haven't said to the Pelicans, you hold off, Jason Tatum's in the deal. Number one, because they can't. Like, because if they make that offer and something happens with Tatum where he averages like 30 in the postseason and they don't want to get rid of him, they have no credibility. They have to follow through with that offer or lose a lot of credibility around the league. Moreover, the Celtics are going to try to convince the Pelicans first to take some kind of Jaylen Brown-centric offer replete with all their draft picks. But Dell Demps has to decide, you know, this Laker offer, it's pretty good. You've got multiple first-round picks. You've got good young talent. But will that Laker offer be there on July 1st? Most executives I've talked to believe it will be. Will that Boston offer trump the Laker offer? A lot of executives I talk to believe it ultimately will. I think they have to decide, are they willing to swallow 3 or 4 uncomfortable months with Anthony Davis for the possibility of getting a bigger package in a trade come July 1st? And really, Jim, you kind of have to wait, don't you? I mean, this is the biggest trade in the history of the franchise. This could yield the most substantial return in NBA history. That's how good Anthony Davis is. and that's how appealing the trade package should be. They've got to make sure they maximize every single inch of it.
Well, I agree. I think you have to wait. I think if you're Dell Demps, you have to wait. You know, Chris, you make the point that will the Lakers deal still be there in the summertime? Probably so. I got another question for you. Tatum. If Tatum is dangled right now, allegedly, reportedly, will he still be on the table come summertime, or might Ainge rip that part away?
Well, this is why Ainge and the Celtics have not directly dangled him, because if they do that, they know there's no going back. I will tell you from talking to people within the organization, they understand that this could come down to Jason Tatum. And put it another way, I don't think Jason Tatum and their unwillingness to deal him will hold up this deal. Now, if the Pelicans say we have to have Tatum, the Celtics might relent, but they're also going to turn around and say some of these other assets got to come off the table. You can't have 4 first-round picks if you're going to take Jason Tatum. So there's going to be some extensive negotiating on all this. But Jason Tatum, I don't believe, based on what I'm told, that Tatum's, you know, the unwillingness to put Tatum in a deal will hold up something like this.
So I got about a minute left. Where do you think Anthony Davis is going to be playing at the start of next season?
It's just guessing at this point, Jim. It really is. But I've long believed that if Boston got a real opportunity, they won't get outbid. They have been waiting for this guy for the better part of 18 months. They have been researching him. He is why they didn't go all in on Kawhi Leonard. He is why they didn't chase Jimmy Butler. They have been waiting on Anthony Davis for a long time. I don't think they get outbid one way or the other. And it's again, just guesswork. I don't think they'll lose out on Anthony Davis.
Like, when you're the city of Boston and you celebrate world championships nearly as often as you do bank holidays, the question is not, will you hold a parade after a championship, but rather, are people going to keep turning out? That's 6 titles for the Patriots. That's 12 parades in 17 years. And if you want to know how good the city of Boston has it when it comes to professional sports, championship overload was a legitimate and actual concern. Could Pats fans still get up for a good party? Could Boston still roll out and celebrate another Lombardi just 100 days after celebrating their last Red Sox World Championship? I mean, do people even have vacation days left at this point? Did they stockpile enough PTO to enjoy the Red Sox winning another fall classic? And then the Pats running through the NFL only a couple of months later. Especially knowing that the Bruins and the Celtics are still in the mix in their respective sports and that pitchers and catchers do report next week. Was Boston actually getting tired of roping off city blocks and shutting down one of America's largest economies to do something that happens about as often as they're supposed to turn to the left and cough? Well, we got our answer yesterday, and the answer is hell no. The Boston Globe estimated that 1.5 million people showed up for the Patriots parade, 1.5 million. Let me put that into proper perspective. Less than 700,000 people live inside the city limits. The entire Boston metropolitan area only has 4.5 million crowds crammed in. That means 1/3 of them were at parade number 12, which was essentially the greatest hits of Boston parades. Look, I'm not going to go out and say that this was as good as the Eagles parade last year when Jason Kelce got mummered up and people were smashing horse crap and Philadelphia was blowing off some major steam. But this was an absolute all-star effort by a city that does not seem close to being done. As an example, Gronk did what Gronk does. He had his shirt ripped off. He high-pointed beers that were chucked at him. He played air guitar. He got handsy with his swimsuit model girlfriend. He even shook off taking a football to the head.
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
TB12 didn't just have something for the haters. His daughter was bringing the heat. She had a goat is greater than ram sign. Straight heat, straight fire. Tom even made up for that drop in Super Bowl 52, going OBJ with a one-handed snag of a pass from a fan in the mayhem. Even the Boston PD got in on the act. Tying the Rams at 3 with a perfect snap, hold, and field goal in the middle of the parade route. And while Bob Kraft didn't start any Bill the Goat chants, he did ice up. Dude was swagged out in a chain that he got from Meek Mill.
I think this was our largest turnout ever. And they were so energized. It's, what a great town we live in. Well, this was a gift from Meek Mill. When we won the Super Bowl, he performed at the after party. His new album is Champions, so we thought we should have him.
It's a 77-year-old dude breaking down the library of a 31-year-old rapper while wearing about 6 pounds of gold and diamonds around his neck and some custom-made Nikes that say 6X on the back. And if you want to know if the Patriots forgot all that offseason talk about how they never have any fun, Daron Harmon and about 10 other Pats swerved halfway across the Mass Turnpike to take a run at Eagles offensive lineman Lane Johnson.
Somebody say it wasn't fun to play in New England. Oh, Lane Johnson, F-O. When you go to 4 Super Bowls in 6 years, that's fun, baby. How many rings you got? I got 3 rings.
They look like they're having some fun now. Everybody was. Except those dudes. Those idiots who were giving each other the hands. Yes, I saw the video of those morons brawling with each other with about 100 people with smartphones capturing the blow-by-blow. Everybody's partying their brains out except these dudes who try to beat each other's brains out. But then again, every city's got a group of morons who do their best to ruin a good time. Yesterday was no different. But for that dude who went Adam Vinatieri on some guy's dome and then tried to throw his hood up and walk away like nothing happened, expect a knock on your door sometime this afternoon. Now, you know where I stand on the Patriots. They'll be done when Tom and Bill say they're done. And now you know where I stand on the city of Boston. They'll be tired of winning when their teams stop winning. Because yesterday, the two most popular chants going were, we want 7, we want 7, and right here next year, right here next year. And let's be real, they may not even have to wait until next year. He is a friend of the program. Dana White is my guest. Dana, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good, good, Dana. So we're a few days out. You got a big card on Saturday night that features the middleweight championship, but also the return of Anderson Silva. How fired up for you are you for UFC 234, and how does that one look?
I'm so excited. I actually fly to Australia tonight. I can't wait for this fight. Israel Adesanya, 15-0, undefeated, the rising star in the UFC, taking on the legend Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva said his whole career, I want to fight myself. I want to fight, you know, a blueprint of me. Well, he's got it this Saturday night. Israel Adesanya is a stand-up kickboxer, and it should be awesome. And then the main event, Robert Whittaker, the champion from Australia, against Kelvin Gastelum. Both guys are knockout artists, and I don't see this going 5 rounds.
Dana White joining us. UFC 234 is pay-per-view. It's coming up Saturday night. Dana, you mentioned the flight to Australia. What do you do? I mean, do you try to kind of rest and recover, or are you getting a lot of work done when you're in the air and you've got all that downtime?
No, I try to, when I go to somewhere like Australia, I'm definitely going to sleep. I'm going to get some sleep on the plane, and then we hit the ground running. As soon as I get there, I have like an hour to get to the press conference. So, no, I will sleep on the plane.
And what's that like when you get on the ground? That's going to be wild, right? Like you get there and you've got that kind of production in front of you and you've got an hour to get there. What's it like when you get on the ground?
Yeah, it's go, go, go until, you know, till we're done that day. It's awesome, though. Going into fight week like this, I love it. I couldn't be more fired up, especially with, you know, a fight like this fight. I'm so excited for both of these fights. I'm really excited to see this Israel Adesanya Silva fight, too.
Adesanya's got a ton of it, which I want to get to in a minute, but go back to Whittaker. Whittaker has not lost for 5 years. Whittaker's fought on cards in Australia before, but now he's returning home to Australia to headline a card as the middleweight champion of the world. What do you think that crowd is going to be like when he enters the arena on Saturday?
It's going to be insane, yeah. So this thing sold out in 7 minutes. The whole show sold out in 7 minutes. This place is going to be packed. The Australian fans are incredible. It's a very fun, energetic environment. And think about this. Israel Adesanya is from New Zealand, and Whitaker's from Australia. If both of these guys win, this fight with Israel Adesanya and Anderson Silva is for the number one contender position. So if whoever wins that night, but if it ends up being Israel Adesanya and Robert Whitaker, New Zealand versus Australia, it's going to be madness.
We're talking to Dana White. The fact that thing sold out in 7 minutes is pretty amazing. Now, I had Silva on the show, Dana, a few weeks back. I cannot believe this guy is still going at it as hard as he is at 43. How do you explain that? What makes that guy tick?
You know what? He's a stud. He's one of these guys that's always taking care of himself. You know, a lot of the guys that you see burn out fast in this sport are the guys that party a lot and don't take care of their bodies. Anderson Silva, even when he's taken a lot of time off, he stays in the gym. He stays healthy. He's always trying to evolve as a martial artist, and that's how he stayed in the game so long.
All right, so Silva's going to fight Adesanya. Adesanya frequently gets compared to a younger version of Silva. For those who have not seen Israel fight yet, is that a good comparison? How fair is that?
Absolutely. It's like I said, Anderson always wanted to fight himself. He wanted to fight a blueprint of himself. Well, he's got it in Adesanya. Yes, he fights just like a young Anderson Silva. He can pull off things that other people can't. It's pretty amazing.
Dana White, my guest. Dana, I mentioned that from the outside anyway, Israel's got this it, like the guy's a star. And not just how he finishes guys, but how he promotes fights. Is it safe to say that if he were to win on Saturday night, that people are about to see his name on top of fight cards for a long time?
I think so, yeah. I mean, if he can get through Anderson Silva, but then once he gets to Anderson Silva, then he's got to fight Robert Whitaker, you know? And, you know, if Whitaker wins on Saturday night, and Whitaker right now is the most underrated champion in the UFC.
All right, so back to Whitaker. Whitaker is a guy that I know you've been watching since The Ultimate Fighter, and as you've said, quote,
correct,
every punch he throws has bad intentions. What's your sense as to his mood and his approach coming into the fight?
Yeah, I think that him and Gastelum are exactly the same. Both guys move forward. Both guys throw every punch with bad intentions, and both guys are knockout artists. You know, I think it's going to be fireworks, man. It's going to be a great fight.
All right, so Whitaker's a beast. He has not lost in half a decade. One more thought about Gastelum. I mean, how big of a threat is he to Whitaker?
Yeah, big. I mean, if you look at the guys that this guy's beat, he goes into fights always the underdog. You know, he's beat Jacare Souza, Michael Bisping, Johnny Hendricks, and the list goes on and on. This kid, at middleweight, he's tough and he hits hard.
UFC 234 is coming up. That is pay-per-view. You know, also the big thing here, Dana, is, and I've seen on ESPN, they are going so hard and they're really promoting. When you, and you're working with them right now, when you consider where ESPN was back in the day with the sport and with your company and how far they've come, what's that feel like and what's that deal been like
for
you so far?
Yeah, it's been incredible. And these guys were partners before the deal even started. They've been incredible for us, you know, and we've reciprocated. It's been a good relationship already. And, yeah, and just for the record, the prelims are on ESPN Saturday night. So you can check out the prelims on ESPN and then go right into the pay-per-view. But, yeah, it's been amazing, man. I'm obviously a very proud moment for me and the UFC.
Dana White joining us. Dana, you were pretty critical of Oscar De La Hoya for his involvement.
I've been telling you how to do that.
Is that me or is that you, Dana?
I've been telling you how to do that.
Appreciate you, Dana. Thanks for coming back on.
No, yeah. I could tell a tough question was coming, so that's my new system for tough questions.
You just start playing a record like that? That was smooth. That was good. Not so tough.
That was weird.
Yeah, listen, actually, not such a tough question, but I just want to go someplace else because we're running out of time. Last week, the Nevada State Athletic Commission announced suspensions for Khabib and Conor coming out of UFC 229. Khabib gets 9 months, Conor 6, retroactive to October 6th. What do you make of the suspensions? In your mind, were they fair?
What I don't think was fair was, listen, I understand that these guys have to make a statement. You can't have guys fighting after the fight, okay? It's one thing we can never have, or before the fight. And but the $500,000 to me was, you know, that's a big number. $500,000 that kid got fined, that was a bit excessive.
All right, now, Khabib's camp says that he will not fight until his teammates have been reinstated, which will be October of this year. What do you make of that? Like, are you okay with that, or does he need to get back in the cage sooner than that?
Yeah, no, we you know, we're working on that right now with him. But the one thing, I absolutely agree with the athletic commission on that one. Bad enough, you know, the fighters are in their fight. You cannot have the corner men jumping in and fighting and the things that went on leading up to that fight with the corner and their teammates. That can never happen.
Dana White joining me for a few more moments. The committee also approved a one-fight conditional license, Dana, for John Jones to fight at UFC 235 next month after his last fight was moved to California because of the presence of a trace amount of M3 steroid in December. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I don't blame them for doing that either. I mean, if you look at John Jones' past, you know, he's going to have to prove himself again to everybody. The Athletic Commission, the fans, the list goes on and on, you know. But he went through this entire camp, obviously didn't test positive for anything. That, you know, the stuff that was in there was proven that it was from old use. And, you know, I'm happy for him. He needs to keep his personal life intact. I want to keep him busy so that, you know, we can see the best out of John Jones before he retires.
You know, Danny, you just touched on it, but let me ask you this. I mean, you and I have talked about him over the months, the years. I mean, there's no denying this guy's talent. There's no denying his potential. Is there any part of you that gets tired of the drama with Jones? Have you ever gotten to the point where you thought to yourself, officially, this guy's just more trouble than he's worth, and I'm just going to move on without him?
Yeah, I you know, we've done that. We've you know, this guy has sat out while he's dealt with his problems, and we moved on. The division moved on. The company moved on. And, you know, this time, hopefully, this is the last time, and John has his stuff together. I'd really, really like to see him reach his full potential before he's done.
And then a final thought about Connor. There's been talk about Connor facing Cowboy Cerrone when he's reinstated. He called out Connor. Connor responded. How likely is that fight? Have talks for that fight started?
Yeah, listen, if these two want to fight each other, I'm cool with it. If you look at, first of all, look at what Cowboy's accomplished in his career. You know, he's broke tons of records here at the UFC, and he was an underdog going into this last fight against Hernandez, this young up-and-coming killer, and Cowboy completely destroyed this kid. And, yeah, I'm down with it. If these two want to fight, I'll make it happen.
He is UFC president Dana White. You've got UFC 234. It is live from Australia. It's sold out in 7 minutes, 10 p.m. Eastern on pay-per-view. Dana, I appreciate you coming back on, man. I thought that was a pretty cool trick when that Oscar De La Hoya name came up and you popped that record in there, man. That was smooth.
Thanks, buddy. All right. Always a pleasure, my friend.
You too, Dana. Have a great flight. Let's go to Illinois. Darren. Darren, how are you?
On top of the world, Rome. Thank you. Now, I caught your show on TV for the first time a couple weeks ago, and I ain't the most religious fella, but if I were, I'd say that XR4 TI crew of yours looks like hell. But I'm not calling about that. I'm calling about your number one seed in the East, the Milwaukee Bucks. And you got to get Coach Mikey Budenholzer on the horn again soon for that karma, Rome. Last time he was on, you asked Booty how high Giannis's ceiling is. Well, he woke up today and stretched his arms, so now that ceiling's about 2 feet higher than it was when he hit the rack last night. This guy's got arms like oats. I heard the team was having a rough flight back Monday after whipping up on Brooklyn. All kinds of turbulence, plane rocking to and fro out of control. That is until Giannis once again took control of the situation. He reached into the cockpit, grabbed the helm, righted the plane, stole a Pepsi from the beverage cart, and even goosed the stewardess for good measure, all without leaving the comfort of his seat. Now, Romy, lots of highlights to look forward to tonight against the Wizards, but especially pay attention to how Giannis is able to autograph the bottom of the midcourt scoreboard during the opening jump, and how the Bucks don't ever have to leave their spots along the lane to high-five one another after a made free throw. Or Giannis pointing to the heavens after Monday night's victory and accidentally tickling the good Lord's feet. Or the Bucks front office beating the trade deadline by lobbing offers to the Pelicans for AD and his wingspan. And if that doesn't work out, maybe toss an offer to the Department of Natural Resources for other pelicans for their wingspan. And if that doesn't work out, maybe they can lob an offer to Pixar to acquire Elastigirl from The Incredibles Part 2. Jim, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, well, that's all the time I got to talk on the phone today. Bye.
Darren in Illinois, rock him. My man's brand is the length of the Milwaukee Bucks. How long their arms are. Dan in Denver. Hey, Dan, what's up?
What's up, Rome? Thanks for the vine. I love the show Radio Row last week. I saw Mike in Little Rock came crawling out of the bayou to meet you. Now, Jim, I've never had the pleasure of meeting you myself, but what do you go these days, 6'4"? Because you made that guy Mike look tiny. Mike puts the little in Little Rock with that short stature, light complexion, and all those failed drug tests. I couldn't tell if you were meeting a clone or interviewing a past wide receiver. Where the hell did you guys take that picture anyway? A fish concert? Nooch, you brown-nosing little bitch. You won't get a golden ticket by praising the host. I've gotten two, and I'm pretty sure Jim hates me. Just like you won't win a smack-off by bashing him. I'm looking at you, Chael. But way to come different getting Rome's ink inked on your body. What's next? You going to drive across the country in your car, sleeping with a seat reclined, host a jungle clone stock, jump through a folding table, develop a speech impediment to begin your next call? Way to take points from Kyle in Green Bay. He's a great guy to model yourself after. And why does this guy brag about how much he smoked during all of his calls? War Newt being the only thing I've smoked during this call. Out.
Dan in Denver. Hey, bro, saying that I hate you is pretty strong. I mean, I don't like you at all. But it's not personal.
Good night now!